The Power of Henkel.
Welcome to the podcast today, everyone. I'm Laura, your host, and today we're going to be discussing the topic of power modules, which, as most of you are probably aware, are critical devices in everything from electric vehicle chargers all the way up to industrial robotics. Like most electronics today, power modules are becoming more complex. So I'm joined by our expert today, Mahmoud Awad, who is the Henkel Business Development Manager, who has lots of experience in thermal materials and also knows a lot about the design trends in the area of power modules. So we know that effectively managing operational heat in these devices is one of the ways to make them perform better. So that's a lot of what our topic of conversation is going to be about today. So Mahmoud, welcome.
Laura, thank you for having me.
Of course, thank you for joining. So let's just dive right in. We'll assume, as I said, that most listeners are pretty familiar with power modules. So if you can talk a little bit about some of the latest design trends and the opportunities, but also the challenges that some of these new architectures present in terms of system performance.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, if we look at the market trends, we see three things happening, really. I mean, it really resides on the high voltage, high frequency, and then also the temperature of those modules. So what we see is a shift of using the classical silicon chips towards silicon carbide and gallium nitride chips. This obviously has a inclination in terms of what it's going to do with the thermal, the operational temperature of the module, but then also the voltage, and then also the frequency switching of that device. So a little bit depending on what kind of chips you're using, you then have to adjust your thermal solution that you want to implement into your module. So if we look at silicon carbide, which is becoming more and more used into the market, we see that there are needs for higher thermal conductivity versus maybe the classical kind of silicon chips. If we then look more at the gallium nitride kind of chips, we see more frequency switching. Yeah. Okay. So again, depending on what kind of solution from a semiconductor perspective you're using, you then have to adjust your thermal solution as well.
Right. So then power module designers, or the designers of these chips and devices within them, have lots of ways to kind of extend and optimize performance and function and make them more functional. But then that presents a lot of challenges in terms of the heat that they're generating and how operationally efficient they are if they become, let's say, just too hot. So one of the most critical elements of these new designs that leverage some of this new semiconductor technology is how you're going to control for all of that increase in thermal energy, right? So how do we get that out of the device? And there's lots of ways to do that. I mean, there's active cooling situations, et cetera, but probably in a power module, you're going to be looking at thermal interface materials to help efficiently move heat from that heat generating component out through the heat sink and out. So describe how thermal interface materials are kind of helping some of these new designs achieve some of those performance expectations.
Yeah, so as said before, I mean, if you look at the especially the higher operational temperature perspective, I think this is a big challenge that we see more and more. Where typically, you know, operational temperature went up to 150 degrees. We now see temperatures going up to 175 degrees, and the future is saying probably 200 degrees C of a chip temperature is possible as well.
So is that, sorry, just to interrupt, is that current Is that a current capability? 150 is what we're seeing currently. And then what's your timeline, say, to get to 175 or 200? Is that 2 years away, 3 years away?
Yeah, so if we would put that in a timeline, I would say the 175 degrees C is 2 to 3 years. And then probably 200 degrees C is probably something out 7 to 10 years.
Okay.
And what we then see, obviously, is that you need to have materials that can resist that kind of high operational temperature during a long time in terms of thermal cycling. So the durability of those materials need to work throughout the complete lifetime of that module. And safety and reliability are absolutely key in this perspective. So to have a reliable material that you can process in a good manner and then also have in use for a very long time is absolutely essential. So you have a couple of options there in terms of, you know, you could use a grease, you could use a phase change, you could use a graphite sheet, and all those have benefits and disadvantages, yeah, either in use or in actual performance. So what we see with the phase change is that you have a material that you can print and automate, also apply very thin, and you could have very good performance over the complete lifetime of your power module.
So how does one really go about, because there's so many different kinds of thermal materials. I think in fact, Henkel has a very complex matrix that shows like how you might select a different thermal material based on your objectives, which include not only the performance in application, but also how you're going to process that or how you're going to put it down. So whether it needs to be automated or if you have more of a manual process. So there's a ton of different kinds of materials. There's pads and liquids and gels and adhesives. And you referenced, you know, phase change materials and thermal greases. So if I'm a thermal designer who's designing something for a power module, how do I decide which thermal material is the best one for my application?
Yeah, that depends a little bit on what you're looking for. If you're looking for a clean process, if you're looking for price, if you're looking for quality, if you're looking for higher reliability, I think that would probably be key elements to decide which kind of thermal interface material you're going to choose. I think if the material is good enough and the performance of the material is good enough, you probably could go with a grease. I think if you have a very high performing module that you want to use in the field for a very long time, probably grease wouldn't hold up to it throughout the complete lifetime. You would see pump out effects. You would see a degradation of the thermal performance over time. And then also the process is a lot more messier typically than a phase change process.
Okay.
So I think those kind of elements are very key to decide, you know, what kind of thermal interface you're going to choose.
So I know it depends on what the end use is for the power module, but how long in general are these devices expected to last in the field?
Yeah, it depends a little bit what kind of customer you're talking to and what kind of application you talk about as well. I mean, is this a drive which is, you know, in constant use, or is this a device that is only used intermittently? Is that a device that is used only as an intermittent? So I think I would say in general, they would ask for a performance lifetime to simulate about 20 to 30 years in the field.
Okay, so that's a long time. So when you reference grease, for example, not necessarily having that longevity of reliability, and maybe a phase change gives you more of that. Can you talk a little bit about the pros and cons of each of those types of materials?
Yeah, so if we... We and also some of our customers did extensive studies of the reliability of some of the thermal interface materials. So what does the material do in different conditions, from a temperature perspective, so thermal shock, power cycling, and then also how does it behave in different temperature and humidity conditions. We see a difference in performance grease versus a phase change materials, and also within the phase change material range, you would see differences as well. So we definitely see a good performance, a premium performance of the phase change over greases if you compare it in those power cycles and thermal shock kind of conditions.
Okay. And then just speaking about performance in general, I think when a lot of people consider which thermal interface material they're going to select, the first sort of metric that they look at is its thermal conductivity. Like, how high does that thermal conductivity have to be in order for my device to achieve its performance objectives? But sometimes the thermal resistance is a more important metric, particularly in something like a power module, for example. So can you explain why a thinner bond line and lower thermal resistance might be a more important factor in this case?
Excellent point, Laura. I mean, at the end of the day, you could have the most thermal conductive material in a thickness of 2 centimeters wouldn't do anything if you won't have a very thin bond line with maybe only 1 watt per meter Kelvin. So I think at the end of the day, the motto should be, you know, go as thick as possible, or sorry, go as thin as possible and as thick as needed. So if you look at the way that the thermal dissipation works, it obviously looks at the resistance path from your power module to your heatsink. And imagine if your bond line is very thin, you would then be able to transfer that material without a lot of resistance in between, which then makes sure that you dissipate the heat in a very efficient way. So yes, I mean, with the phase change, you would probably be able to go down to, let's say, 40 micron to 30 micron kind of thicknesses, which then ensures that you have a very efficient thermal transfer over time. So yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, thermal conductivity is a reference of how the material could perform from a thermal perspective, but it's definitely not the only one.
Okay. And just thinking about sort of the attributes of a phase change versus a grease, I mean, a phase change by definition changes its phase. So it's basically solid at a certain temperature, and then it sort of melts and wets out at a certain temperature. And then when that device is not in use, it cools and it's back to a solid, which is very different from a grease, which is kind of in sort of a gel or liquid state for its entire lifetime. So is it conceivable, as you mentioned previously, that there's this pump out effect that grease has over time? Is it conceivable that at some point a grease might leave you with ultimately a metal-to-metal interface where there's literally no thermal capability in there at all?
Yes, that's absolutely a possibility. As the material pumps out, you will have less material in your interface, which could lead then that at some point you would have metal-to-metal contact, as well as the possibility that the material will dry out and would, you know, leave you with a device that doesn't have the thermal performance anymore. So that is something that you would see over time, typically with greases, that the thermal performance goes down drastically, and then also then reduces the lifetime of your module. So what we typically see then with the phase change, as you mentioned, it changes phase at a temperature of 45 to 50 degrees C, and has a very good wet out, which then guarantees a very good thermal transfer. And this is a revisable kind of process. So you could do this endlessly. Yeah. So you could heat it up, power it up. It, you know, it melts down at that temperature. It gives you the thermal performance. It cools down again, and you can do that process over and over again.
So to get to that 20 to 30 year lifetime that you might be shooting for, it might be a better, more reliable way to go.
Absolutely, yes.
So there's also, I mean, like you mentioned earlier, a lot of these devices are, their operational temperatures could be within the next 5 years at or exceeding 200 degrees C. So just like these devices are transforming, the thermal materials, development has to follow suit. So what's the latest really with phase change materials development, and how are we going to get to that point where they can handle that kind of heat?
Yeah, currently we're looking at higher operational temperature phase changes as well, materials in development. So we look at 175 degrees C with a higher filler load as well, so higher thermal conductivity, but then remaining on a very low thermal resistance. Remember, if you put more fillers in there, you get a higher thermal conductivity, but then also it could reduces the processability of the material. So you have to make sure that you also stay focused on how the material is processed. So that's an option. 175 degrees C is still a need to have, not a must have, but definitely towards the future, we're gonna develop materials which are suitable for higher operational temperatures, typically silicon free, and then also processable, so something that you could print on your power module.
So there's a lot of things that have to be considered for a balanced formulation, especially as we move forward with these higher operating temperature devices.
Absolutely. So one of the things that we think about as well is, hey, if you have a higher filler load, you have to make sense that you, or you have to make sure that you also have a good particle size distribution to make sure that you have that thin bond line that you are hitting, that you want to focus on, because you want to have that good thermal transfer. Again, the thinner the bond line, typically the better the thermal transfer is. So that's something that you need to consider as well. So it's, as you say, it's a lot of to consider in terms of thermal conductivity, thermal resistance, the processability of the material, rheology, and also the stability of the material over time. How do you want to store it? How do you want to, all those things you need to consider for sure.
Right. Well, I think there's a lot of work to do between now and the future for sure, but it sounds like there's some great options for power module designers in terms of current and currently available thermal materials to achieve their goals. Is there anything else you think that people need to consider or things we haven't talked about today that they should maybe think about before they make a selection?
I think if we look at the industrial automation workspaces that we see and the options that you have with the phase change, I think I said again, I mean you would have a good automated process, a clean process, something that you could design on your power module, offer as a pre-applied solution to the customer, or also have your or let the freedom at the customer side to decide which kind of thermal interface material they could use on a module, but have a reference in terms of what a reliable technology could be for your high performing power modules going forward. And as said, looking at the future with higher operational temperatures and more challenging power densities, I think the phase change material is something that is absolutely something that you need to consider.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how all of this develops over the next few years, both on the power module design side as well as the thermal materials design side. So, thank you, Mahmood, for your insights today. For our listeners today who are interested in learning more about this topic, there are several articles, case studies, videos, all accessible on Henkel's website. So, simply go to henkel-adhesives.com. Click on the Industries tab and then go to Power Generation and Conversion, and you'll find a wealth of information. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
The power of Henkel.